When the revolution came, the militants said, wake up, y'all. You got to comb your hair the natural way.
And the church folks said, oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah?
Shona!
Shona!
And they just kept on going to church and getting on their knees and praying and tithing and building and buying.
And when the revolution came, the militants said, Negroes, you got to change the way you dress.
And the church folks said, oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah?
Just kept on going to church with their knit suits and flowery bonnets and getting on their knees and praying and tithing and building and buying.
And when the revolution came, the militants said you got to give up white folks.
That's Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee performing the Carol M. Rogers poem And When the Revolution Came on their PBS special series with Ossie and Ruby from 1982. Mm. And of course, this week we lost the great Ruby Dee at 91 years old. I was a huge fan of both of them all their lives as performers and as actors, as artists, as revolutionaries, as people who wanted to change American society. And today we honor them with two people who I respect a great deal. Shirley Bassfield Dunlap is in studio, associate professor and coordinator of the theater arts program here at Morgan State University. Good to see you, Shirley.
It's good to see you again, Mark.
Good to have you in studio here.
Yes.
And my dear old friend, Michael Eugene Johnson, is with us. Paul Robeson, Performing Arts Center for Creative Arts Director, is in the studio. Good to have you.
Thanks. Here. Thanks for being anywhere.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee. We did this because we thought, surely, that Ruby Dee deserved a remembrance here on this program.
That's exactly right, and I'm so glad you did do this because it's important that everybody know this icon. I mean, Ruby Dee has been somebody that, in many cases, a lot of people did not know who she was, but knew of her. And this little bitty image of such greatness. Miss Ruby was small in her build, but she was great and large in stature. And I'm happy that you were you asked me to be a part of this. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you're here. Mm-hmm. And I know you really want, you sent me an email as soon as she passed away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first time that I even saw Ruby Dee was we were youngsters at the rec center, and they showed the Jackie Robinson story on a 16-millimeter projector.
She played with Jackie Robinson.
Yes. That's right. And she carried the movie, obviously, and the fact that at the same time, Ossie Davis had a bit role in that movie, as well as Jackie Robinson's brother.
Right.
And
that's right.
I got a chance to meet her a few times. And like my friend says, you know, a small woman, but just such a warm, intelligent actress that her roles that she had throughout her years became hers.
Yeah.
And I think it's very difficult to put someone in, they were to remake certain things. I hope they don't remake anything that she's in, because it proved it even in Raisin in the Sun. You can't remake certain movies.
Right, with Ruth. The interesting thing that I found was that growing up in theater and being a theater student even when I was here at Morgan, that you just never, I did not know, and I finally saw my first Broadway play without Ossie Davis. Now, I was a bit too young to see A Raisin in the Sun. Let it be known. But I remember the first play, and she was actually playing that role, Checkmates, and she was playing with Denzel, and Paul Winfield was her husband. And I thought, well, where's Ossie? Why isn't Ossie? Because, you know, I always saw the two of them together and everything that they did. Even, like you said, their PBS show, their show on Storytellers, on Liar's Bench. And that was just a wonderful story. I was so upset when that PBS show went off the air. But I saw that, and I also saw her in Flying West when it was that she did in New York, and then she brought it. It was brought to the Kennedy Center. The thing that I was so enamored about, which we talked about earlier, was the fact that Miss Ruby could make words sound as if they were just formulated in her brain and came right out of her mouth. Nobody would even suspect that she had weeks of rehearsal. that she had been in the rehearsal room, and you know, these were someone else's words. I thought that was just amazing about her. That was the quality of her work that was just so amazing and kept her working all the time, because she could make something sound like, no, nobody else wrote this but me. So I enjoyed that about her.
One of the things that I was thinking about with Ruby Dee and Ossie Davis is we often, especially I think major media does not want to remember who they were or who she was in their social and political context as well.
Yes.
She always called herself a student of Paul Robeson.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And in that very left-wing radical tradition that she lived in with Paul Robeson and believed in, mm-hmm. to her last breath.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that as the discussion's been going on since her passing, is her role in activism. And even, I think we've even connected, obviously, with Paul Robeson as well as Harry Belafonte, and the comments that I know that they made to young actors and actresses, or actors, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, to which they said, you have a responsibility. And if you've ever followed, and those of us who followed Ruby Dee's television appearances and movie appearances and things like that, she never took a role.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure she was offered it. She never took a role that would be below what she thinks the representation of that particular role should be.
Exactly. And I thought it was interesting also, and quite serendipitous, I guess we should say, is that in the last couple of years, Miss Dee had supported a young man named Daniel Beattie, who opened with his Emergency, and he has been in the last year or so doing Tall Trees, which is the story of Paul Robeson. So I think that is such a nice way that he was able to. She was able to see that role, because Daniel Beattie has been someone that she supported on the onset. She even would introduce him on and mm-hmm. on stage and say, "This is someone I support, and you need to support him and watch this young man grow." And this young man, then his role that he has, it was down in D.C. and then I think it closed about a month or so ago on the West Coast, and it was the story of Paul Robeson and Tall Trees, and I thought, isn't that beautiful? Beautiful. Look how that, you know, that right. circle is completed.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I met her in a classroom at University of Maryland, College Park, prior to me coming to this great institution. Julian Mayfield was a professor at University of Maryland, College Park. And I can almost remember my brother Ronald and I can remember coming in class, and we didn't even pay attention to her because it was a big class, you know, and we watched the movie Uptight with Julie Mayfield. And she was, of course, and a lot of folks didn't know, she also was the associate producer. She had put her money into this. But the vast cast that was in that movie, and I encourage everybody to find it. It's on the DVD. Yeah. Of course, it's a remake and a reconfiguration of The Informer, which was a silent movie made in Ireland about mm-hmm. the revolution over there. But to catch Ruby Dee just playing this unassuming prostitute, mm-hmm. literally. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen a prostitute be so grateful.
She was,
you know, in that role. And so
she had a huge range. We're going to listen to a little short piece now. Mm-hmm. This is a monologue called When I'm Gone, from Two Ha-Ha's and a Homeboy that she did in 1995.
When I'm really gone, I don't want you to listen to any talk about inevitabilities, God's grand design, and how wonderful is the change and challenge provided by that great opportunity called death. Turn a deaf ear to such sound advices. You've got to learn to let go. Get on now with your own show. Think renewal. Think release. Think gratitude to God.
of eternity. Think peace. Turn a deaf ear to such sound advice, especially from the mouths of other women. I expect you to scream, cry, call back your love. Me, of course. Curse fate, claw death, rail and wail. Fall out over the gas.
She had a range. Whether she was playing Mama Lucas in American Gangster, or whether she was playing in Spike Lee's movies, or mm-hmm. whatever she was role she was playing, she mm-hmm. played. She was actually the first African American woman in this century to play roles in Shakespeare.
Yes,
right.
In Greek theater, script as well.
Right.
That was something that was really interesting because she, you know, now we talk about cultural diversity and we talk about colorblind casting, but
right.
Miss D was playing those roles way before we even started making this a fad, and she did classics. She did the classics, and she played Greek productions. She also played, like you said, Shakespeare. And she also played productions that you would not expect that they weren't necessarily written for black nor white, but you mm-hmm. just would not expect someone like Miss D to have that range. And I think that was the beauty of a true actor. And that's something that is important for everyone now. Don't look for the role that is your particular race, but to look for the role that really fits the range that you are able to do and that you feel comfortable doing. And she was really good about that.
Yeah, but I you know, and people don't realize what you were saying earlier. This was what she did in Shakespeare and Greek theater. Was before colorblind casting even mm-hmm. became a concept,
mm-hmm.
and she just broke through that barrier mm-hmm. with the power of her acting, and that's something that you know we forget about. She's done everything. I mean, she's done comedy. She's mm-hmm. done, as I said, Spike Lee movies. She was on Peyton Place. She did Golden Girls on television
yes.
for this role. She mm-hmm. she you know she was she did every kind of thing on stage. And then she and Ossie wrote the book that you have there in front of you.
Yes, yes, yes. With Ossie Davis, and she also wrote my Last Good Nerve, which I thought was the perfect title. It's something that we always say, you are getting on my last good nerve.
Right, so, right, right.
And that was actually made into a play. That was her one woman play that she did, and that was probably around the time of her retirement. But that's interesting about this book with Ossie and Ruby. They get real personal in this book and share a lot of advice on being in love and staying in love, which was very, very lovely to do. And sometimes it's hard working with your partner on the stage or working with your partner 24/7, being with your partner 24/7, but that was not the issue with them. And they had plenty of opportunities where they would go off and do their thing and then come back. But as many roles as they did together, they also did apart. And that was really very nice to see. To see that happen, you know, they both were in A Raisin in the Sun,
right?
And then that was nice because Sidney Poitier left the
production,
and then they did not only the closed out the stage production, but then did the movie. So that was really very nice for them to play husband and wife right there.
I mean, it's kind of so hard to separate them, you know, when
right.
you think about it. But then when you look at the body of work. Between her and Mr. Davis. It's just so much work. The other thing is that, you know, she was an incredible-looking woman.
Yes, yes.
And you know, it doesn't hurt when you got so much talent, mm-hmm. and then you're so I mean, there are pictures that I've seen of early pictures of a movie. I can't remember. It was a British movie where somebody was having a fantasy, and she was literally getting her toes kissed by this British Lloyd, and I can't remember off the thing, and I actually have the picture home now, and I wasn't able to bring it. But all through, I mean, the time that she was 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 and 80 and 90, Ruby Dee is an incredible physical woman to look at. And so being the mother and the quickness of her wit, even in American Gangster, you could almost apply it to a lot of the African-American women that a lot of us grew up, because it wasn't, it was never, her 12 minutes in that whole play, it was never about her.
The movie, you mean?
The movie, excuse me, American Gangster. If you look at her lines, from what I understand from reading about it, that a lot of this she wrote herself, that her lines in American Gangster. Mm-hmm. If you look at her lines, it was never about her. It was always about her family.
Right.
And about those, and about his marriage,
right? And she was very. Well, she had three. They had three children.
Right, and mm-hmm. their son mm-hmm. Guy has been on the show.
He's a film.
He's a folk singer.
Okay,
he's a blues and folk singer. Has been on the show numerous times, and yeah, they have three kids.
Right, they have three kids, and the children were never something that was, you know. Well, we're gonna. The children came with them, and on a lot of opportunities they had, the children were able to come with them. So the children were a very important part of their life, which I thought was very nice. It's very hard when you're in show business to be able to have show business and family business. Have a nice blend. That is very challenging, and so I like the fact that they were able to have a nice balancing act, which is always important in any kind of relationship, that they both had a very nice balancing act. So their children were sometimes right there on the set with them,
right.
on backstage with them, and that is so very important for anybody.
And what you were talking about earlier, just to go back for this one second. I wanted to make sure I had the roles and the dates right, just to put this out there before we talk about something else. When it comes to Ruby Dee, I mean, she played things like, this is right after Raising the Sun. We're talking about Shakespeare, 1965, before any black men were playing against white men in these roles.
Mm-hmm. In the park sometimes, too.
She played Taming of the Shrew.
Yes.
And she played Catherine in Taming of the Shrew.
That's right.
And she played Cordelia in King Lear.
Yes.
In 1965. Mm-hmm. The Birds Orestia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the role that I remember so well that she did in theater as well as was shot as a film was when she played Bozeman Lena.
Oh, yes.
And she played Lena.
Ethel Fugard's
and the great Ethel Fugard play, where she did, as many people say, her role of Lena in Ethel Fugard's Bozeman Lena was one of the finest acting jobs ever done by anybody at any moment in the history of theater.
That's right.
Many people label it that. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the thing is that, and that's a South African piece, and so that's really
One of the greatest playwrights in the world, Ethel Fugard.
Exactly. And I think that she introduced to America that role that, because from that point on, she had to become the actual example for that role. Nobody has topped her in that.
So let me do this first. We have to roll out of here in about 3 minutes, but I want to play very quickly a piece from American Gangster with her and Denzel. It's the piece you were talking about. Let's play this very quickly.
Frankie, I need to speak with you a minute. Please, sit down.
Listen,
sit down
I have to
just
go.
A minute. Will you please come back a little later? Thank you.
Mom, I got to go, all right?
Yes, just a few words.
Listen to me,
Yeah, please, sit down. Just a few words. I've been thinking about some things. You know, if you'd have been a preacher, your brothers would have been preachers.
Right.
If you'd have been a soldier, they'd be soldiers. You know that. I mean, they all came here because of you. I mean, you called and they came running.
Right.
That's because they look up to you. They always expect you to know what's best, but even they know you don't shoot cops. Even I know that. Even knows.
Right.
The only one who doesn't seem to know is you.
All right, Mom.
Sit,
I ain't gonna shoot. I promise you, I ain't gonna shoot.
I never asked you where all this came from because I didn't want to hear you lie.
I don't want you to worry about it. Now, come on, I got to go.
Don't lie to me.
So that was an incredible scene.
Yeah, and that was my best scene of the picture. because she kept, and I will, and I'll say real quick, you know, she kept saying to him, I didn't need to know, you didn't need to tell me where this was coming from, because I didn't need you to lie to me.
Mm-hmm. She knew.
So, and I just wanted to kind of close with that, because I'm one of her, she was nominated for an Academy Award for that performance. She didn't get the award, but she was nominated for that. She'd won an Emmy and a Grammy before that. And, you know, and I was saying, I remember the Nation magazine when the war in Iraq started, they were the first two signatures on the petition against the war in Iraq.
That's right.
She never stopped being a political figure.
Yes. And I think that that is important because she actually made everybody who was in the arts realize the importance of being an activist because so many people look up to you. Mm-hmm. And that was what I think is very important in the message that they bring.
I want to thank both of you for taking your time. Shirley Westfield Dunlop, it's always great to see you here.
Yes,
our Morgan State University Theater Director, Associate Professor. Great to have you in the studio.
It's good to be here.
My old friend, Michael Eugene Johnson, Director of the Paul Robeson Performing Arts Center. Good to have you here as well.
Always, always a pleasure.
And we remember Ruby Dee, and we are going to go out here right now in this break with Saving All My Love, sung by with the great Whitney Houston, written by Jerry Goffin, who passed away yesterday, and mm-hmm. one of the great songs, mm-hmm. soul songwriters of our time, died at 75. We're going to break, and when we come back, we're going to play you the interview we did with Bill Henry. The election is this Tuesday. He's in a very close campaign here. We had Senator Conway on. Now you hear Bill Henry in his journey to become the next state senator here for the 43rd District. We'll be right back with Bill Henry.
Being last on your list, but no other man's gonna do. So I'm saving all my love for you. It's not